And it is a day of finality. This is the final Parish of the Patriots show for 2024. We do plan to be back for 2025. The final show, final day of 2024. And I hope you got plan. I hope you have a good news. My plan is the same. It's just another day for me. I don't understand people getting all hyped up. In fact, I hate New Year's. Like, I hate 4th of July because people buy fireworks. I have to hear these things going off. I'm trying to go to sleep. It's like sleeping in a war zone. But nevertheless, my own whining and complaining about a New Year's fireworks aside, this is the final day and the final show for 2024. It's hard to believe how quickly it went by. 304th show. We just keep rolling. And the show must go on. We do have a lot of fun. And if you are new, I encourage you to stick through the whole thing. We do have a Christian-specific segment that comes around the halfway mark of the show. Don't tune it out. Give it a chance. Maybe you'll get something out of it. If you do get something out of the show, as always, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. We just got snail mail. That's all we're doing. That's all we're going to do. I don't have any plans to bring back the cryptocurrency. If Trump isn't talking BS and he rolls back a lot of this regulatory business when it comes to like Bitcoin, I might bring it back then. But as it stands now, I have to file. Doing Bitcoin requires to stay within the framework of legality. I have to file all these reports. They cost money to file. It's just not hassling with it. So we're just doing the snail mail. If you want to drop something in there, it is very much appreciated. You can find the address for that here on the description page for the show here on Radio Albion. So with that having been said, let us partake off into the listener supporter mailbag for this week. First up, GPD wishing you and all the family a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year. Thank you for all your good works. Be well and may God bless. That's from Nick. Thank you. Thank you very much, Nick. I do appreciate it. And I hope all of y'all had a good Christmas. And we're going to head right off into the new year. This past year has definitely been, shall we say, interesting. It's been very interesting. And no doubt 2025 is going to gonna be a complete shit. We all know it is. Look, we're trying to be optimistic, and we all know 2025 is already gonna be it's gonna be a shit show. But hey, we're gonna be here for it. You're not alone on the high seas of this clown world shit show. We're gonna be here. We're gonna laugh about it. We're gonna talk about it. We're gonna stay up with all of these things. Next up, Grandpa, Merry Christmas, and thanks for all you do to support the cause. And this is a listener from the formerly great state of Colorado. You know, I haven't been to Colorado in years. Used to be one of those people, you know, that your people in Colorado hate. You know, the Texas tourists that show up. You know what I'm talking about. The Texas tourists that show up in Colorado in the summertime because it's cool. They go up in the mountains. They drive everywhere like they're going to, their car is going to jump off the side of the cliff and just go off the mountain. They won't go. They're just putting around because they're scared it's going to jump off the mountain. I didn't drive like that, but I did used to be one of those. And been to Colorado in a lot of years. I'd like to go back, but I'm poor. So you don't have to worry about me cluttering up the roads. Cluttering up the roads with the rest of the tourists. Now we know. We know why Colorado. Because the Texas tourists that come in Colorado in the summertime, at least they're just a temporary thing. You know they're going to go back. Remember that. When you get frustrated with the Texas tourists that show up in Colorado in the summertime, just remind yourself that they are going to go back because people from Texas ain't staying in Colorado for no wintertime. You guarantee to that. First snowfall, the last one is skedaddling out and heading south. We all know it's the Californians. That's why it's formerly the great state of Colorado, because it's the Californians. The Californians come and they don't leave. Believe me, we all feel your pain. GPT, I would ask a question, but you've answered them all, Mr. T. Well, Mr. T, we're going to answer questions that you ain't even thought of to ask. Maybe because it's stuff that you wasn't interested in, but you, nevertheless. Nevertheless, we shall invent questions to answer, whether you like it or not. And finally, dear GPD, better late than never, I guess. I hope all is well with you and yours, and that you've managed to have a nice Christmas. Hoping 2025 is better for us all. That's from Jackie. Thank you very much, Jackie. As for the in-between stuff that I leave out because it's more personal information, I feel your pain. I was talking the other day about how much stuff I got to do. I have got currently like 3-4 or more things that need to be done. And I just can't seem to get them done. Because I've got this big project going. And then something else comes up that has to take priority. So I have to stop this project, put it on hold because this other one has higher priority. I've got any number of things going on that I need to be getting done right now. And now it's raining. You may hear it today. I had a surprise thunderstorm pop up this morning. And it's muddy, which means all of my stuff, because all my projects involve being outside. All these things I need to get done. You know, they're not just like tinker projects. They're literally things that got to be done. And they all involve going outside. And it's muddy. I can't get them done. And next thing I knew, I turn around. There's more stuff. More stuff to get done. I know, I'm whining about it. Y'all all sitting there going, look, dude, you ain't the only one. We all got preaching to the choir. It just never ends. And then I find out, oh, this has got to be done. There's something else that's got to be done. Who knew? Then I have to decide. It's just like my life is like I'm constantly running triage. I'm having to run around and prioritize. Well, I need to get these brakes done. I got to do this brake job. That needs to happen before I do this over here. You know, and it just goes on and on. Right now, it says, and then it's muddy. I can't do nothing outside. So I have to wait for it to dry out. It rained the other day and got muddy. Okay, well, I'm like, it'll be dried out of here in a few days. And then I have a surprise rain come up. I wouldn't expect it. I watched the forecast yesterday morning. And it's like, someone asked me, they say, hey, you know, is it supposed to rain? It's like, I watched the forecast. Not going to be any rain. Then I wake up this morning and I hear thunder. I'm like, where'd this come from? This is what happens because, you know, granted, my forecast came from what looked, from all appearances, looked to be a recently retired stripper on TV. So I'm not too surprised. I'm not too surprised that it was incorrect. Seriously, though, you know, you get like you watch the weather for it. Must be insulting to be a meteorologist, you know, like a serious. Because you watch the weather for it and you got a guy on there and you can tell he knows his business. You know, he talking and he's explaining models and stuff. And then like the minute he's off, they put some recently retired, looks like appears to be a recently retired stripper in there. And they just trying to do the same job. It's got to be belittling. You could just be interchanged with a stripper. And anyway, doesn't matter. I was reading a piece this morning before doing the show. I was reading a piece about, it was on the topic of how the government and stuff, that, you know, they try to apply things that worked in the past. And because they don't understand that, you know, the fundamental nature of certain things has changed, those solutions don't work, but they keep trying them over and over again. There was a certain amount of validity to the thing. But what struck me and what I wanted to get into today was that, again, I was struck by how people don't understand that, you know, they still are buying into these narratives that are incorrect. And what I mean by that, I'll explain it here in just a minute as we get off into it. They were talking specifically like how the Republicans, you know, how Trump's Make America Great Again and the Republicans are always yearning back to go back to Reagan. You know, if we could get back to Reagan, we had a booming economy in the 80s. And they begrudgingly have to admit that the economy was also, quote unquote, doing well under Bill Clinton. The Republicans yearning to go back to Reagan always kind of omit the part where it was doing pretty well under Bill Clinton, too. And anyway, this opinion piece I was reading was talking about, you know, the different things they try to go back and recreate Reagan. But what they miss is a fundamental error, and that is the appearance that the economy was doing well back then. I think I'm going to title, I may change my mind, but I'm going to probably title this show something like Understanding the 80s, because I was there. And the person that wrote this article was probably there too. And even now, after all these years, they don't understand. This is why it's important to constantly seek truth, to constantly understand, to learn to grow. Because otherwise, you all these decades later, you were there for the 80s, you were there for the 90s, but because you're not constantly trying to figure things out and understand the truth of things, you're still living in this delusion bubble that the economy was good in the 80s and 90s. But it was an illusion, and this was the point they missed in this piece I read. Because it's not that the fundamental, underlying fundamentals have changed, and that's why those old solutions aren't going to work. It's because those old solutions were an illusion. They were a lie. It just gave the perception that the economy was doing better. Then this person didn't understand this. And I'm not linking up the article because I'm not going to sit here and read through the article. I'm just giving you the gist of this opinion piece because it's so common. You run into this a lot when you get into like normie conservatives and Republicans. They're always, we just got to go back and do what Ronald Reagan did. And then the economy will be great. But it won't. Not because there's some detail that has changed. It's because the whole thing was a lie to begin with. People had the perception of things doing better, but it was a lie. And we're going to get into that, understanding how this, because I get so tired of this yearning for the days of Reagan, Reaganomics. And you'll see this part of the theater between Team D and Team R, supply side economics. If we just deregulate Wall Street, things will get better. You see, the poor, innocent corporations are being burdened down by government regulation. Yeah, that worked out, didn't it? One of the things that happened during Bill Clinton's tenure is they changed the law. There used to be a law that separated, like, banks, you know, like your bank that you deal with, and their investment branches. They had to have that separate. There had to be a wall up between it. They took that down because, hey, more deregulation's got to be good, right? And again, is another one of those, we saw how that worked out sort of thing. But I get so wore out and so tired with this BS. This romantic BS of the economy was so much better then, back in the 80s and the 90s. And again, I was there for it. And at the time, if you asked me, I'd be like, yeah, these policies are working good, because I too was under the illusion of economic prosperity. But it was fake. And we're going to talk about why it's fake. Because again, it wears me out when people are my age or older and they're still buying into it. They don't see the fakery of it. They think the economy was really good. And if we just go back and try to LARP Reagan again, then the economy will be great again. But it was a lie and it won't work this time. You can't reimpose this illusion. Because it's an illusion, because people don't understand, these pundits don't understand that it was illusion to begin with, but you can't repeat it. Real economic prosperity, if you're going to have a real fundamental economic prosperity, it requires that people have more money. I just recently did a Daily National show, and the title of it was something along the lines of nobody's got any money. Nobody's got any money. To have a truly growing, a real one, not this papered over BS that they give you statistics and try to convince you the economy is doing great. Not that. To have an actual, healthy, growing economy, it requires that people have got to have money. They got to have more money. If they got more money in their pocket, they're going to spend that money. And when they're spending that money is moving around. And the people that are making the things are selling the things that people are spending money on. Now they have money and they can turn around. And the money's moving around and everybody's doing better. A real good microcosm of this, and I've talked about this before, but it's been a minute. A really good microcosm of understanding the importance of this and how it works is to understand how Walmart destroyed rural America. Walmart utterly, when you go through these towns in rural America and they're decimated, they're just meth lab filled shitholes. Walmart did that. Walmart did that. And the way it worked, I don't want to spend too much time on this because I guess I've talked about this before, but it's a way to understand how money, you know, real money coming in and people having more of it is what makes an economy healthy. When I was a kid and I grew up in rural in small town America, you know, you go to town and there were all these small businesses owned by local people. The local, some of them were franchises, but they were owned by local people. And people would buy from this store who would turn around and buy from this store, and the money was moving around. You know, you spent your money at this one local store. It didn't disappear. It went to, they had to buy things from the other local store and so on and so forth. And the money moved around and some money came in. You know, if someone came into town to go, you know, spend a week deer hunting or something, they spent money in the town and that money came in and stays in the town. And the town stayed healthy. Walmart comes in and prices everything at a loss and drives all of those businesses out. And then they raise their price up back to the normal price or more. Now, all of the money in the town is being spent at Walmart. There's one store. It's a monopoly. And for some reason, this is okay in America. Walmart has a monopoly. And all of the money in the town that gets spent at Walmart. Well, guess where it goes? It goes back to corporate. It goes to Walmart headquarters. It goes to Walmart. It leaves the town. Sure, Walmart spends a little bit. They pay their employees and that money stays, but it's a fraction of the money. The money that's getting spent is being siphoned off and leaving the town. It's not staying in town. It's going to Walmart headquarters. And it parasites the economy and you wind up with these little sad towns that are now, that used to have squares that had thriving businesses on them. Now they have payday loan, cash for title. If you're in a state that's legalized marijuana, there's weed shops there. This is what you wind up with. Now, getting back on topic, that's a good illustration of the difference between when people have more money and the economy is thriving. That's what, you know, the old small town America, that was what you had some money coming in. People had a little more money and that money's moving around. You've got a healthy economy. What happened in the 80s and 90s is they eased credit. Like everybody and their dog. I remember there was actually jokes going around at the time. There were people that literally, this literally happened. People were getting, you know, you get those letters in the mail, those offers. I still get them. 0% APR for 6 months on if you sign up for our credit card. I'd throw them in the trash. I kid you not. I remember this happening. People were literally getting those in the mail for their pets. Like they were spamming people with this so much that somehow the dog's name got into, you know. Fido Smith, you qualify for 0% APR. Fill out this application. We'll send you a credit card. People were literally getting spammed with credit card offers for their pets. That happened. It was crazy. And people would joke about it. They were even getting credit card offers for their pets. They eased the credit. People's pets getting a credit card. Everybody getting a credit card. And it created this illusion. Because you can go out and run up your credit card. Now all of a sudden, even if it's just a couple thousand, poor working people, a couple thousand, not a lot of money. And more so back then than it is now. You know, all of a sudden you got a credit card and you can run up $2,000 and your minimum payment's like $40. Well, I can afford $40 and now I got $2,000. Everybody living high. They're going on vacation. They're going to Colorado and blocking up traffic because they're driving around slow like their car going to fall off the side of the cliff because they're running up the credit card. But it gave this illusion. All of a sudden, it seemed like everybody had money. People going out and buying cars or buying pickups because now they've loosened up all this credit and people got, it seemed like people got money, but they ain't got no money. It was all an illusion. as I said on my show about nobody's got any money, they can't go back to that well because everybody's tapped out. There is no, it doesn't matter how many credit card offers you send people. It doesn't matter. You see the Federal Reserve, they go back to this well of we'll lower interest rates and that'll make the economy boom. And then it doesn't happen. Why is that? Because it doesn't matter. If you don't got it, you don't got it. You know, if you're going to buy a new car, you know, if you're going to go buy a new car, I'm just going to shoot something middle of the road. We're going to say $40,000 for a new car. You can get some a little cheaper. A lot of them are a lot higher. But I'm just throwing a dart for the center of the target. We'd say $40,000 new car. You go to buy a $40,000 new car. It don't matter if they say we're offering 0% APR. 0% APR for this $40,000 car. You're still going to have probably about a $700 a month payment. It doesn't matter. You're not paying any interest. That's all well and good. But you got $700 a month? Because I can tell you, I sure as hell don't. I ain't got no $700 a month payment I could afford. So it doesn't matter if you've lowered the interest rate to zero because I can't take on any more debt. And that's virtually everybody. People are tapped out. So it doesn't work. And they keep going back to the well, you know, going back to the well. We'll lower interest rate. We'll play with these interest rates. You know, the Federal Reserve, they raise the interest rates because they say there's too much inflation. They lower the interest rates because we said things are getting stagnant. And they keep doing this. And you notice it's making less and less difference, isn't it? Because they're all operating under this illusion. They misunderstand the whole 80s and 90s economy thing. It was all fake, and they're trying to recreate it, but none of it's working, or it doesn't get the result that they're anticipating. We lower these interest rates and the economy will pick up. And yet it doesn't actually happen because everyone's tapped out. They don't got it. You can only play a shell game for so long. You've got to get more money in people's pockets. And because this system that we live under is a parasitical system, it's everything. Wall Street is Walmart in rural America. Everything is being siphoned off to Wall Street. Everything is being siphoned off to the banks. Everything is being siphoned off to the corporation. We have so many leeches on the necks of the American people that they don't have any money. I can sit here and try to rearrange and hey, we'll give you a few drops of blood. Of course, we're going to suck that out too, but you'll do better. And it doesn't work. They've sucked everyone dry. They're just a bunch of husks, just a bunch of dried, shriveled up mummy corpses, mummy corpses out there because ain't nobody got no money. You can offer easy financing. They don't got no money. Look, back in those days, we didn't have such a thing as these payday loan places, cash for title. You know what? That's a fundamental sign, and they ignore it. They allow this extreme form of usury, payday loans. When you have places that are where people go and get a loan on their upcoming paycheck, when people go down there and bring the title to their car so that they can borrow pennies on the dollar on their damn car to try to pay their electric bill this month, hey, that's a sign your economy isn't doing real well. It's a sign everybody's tapped out. That is the leeches sucking that last little bit of blood out. This guy's got another predatory lending, huh? At its finest. They're down to think about that. This is legal in this country. The poorest people that don't have $200 to pay on their light bill, they sucking that out of them too. Somebody poor, they're trying to pay their bills. They can't wait till payday, and they're going to charge these ungodly interest rates and suck them for that last penny out of their pocket like they need it. That's the madness of it all. Like they need it. They can suck that last $200 out of somebody's damn pocket. I don't know why the economy's not picking up. We just need to get back to Reagan. Supply side economics. If we would quit regulating the corporations, the money would trickle down to the people. The money's all going one way. It's being siphoned up. They're a bunch of leeches sucking everything off everybody. We ease credit and get them in more debt. No, they can't take on more debt. They're not going to recreate economic prosperity under Clinton or Reagan or in days past, because it was never economic prosperity to begin with. It gave the illusion of it. You know, it gave the illusion of economic prosperity, but what it was doing is further sowing the seeds to what we got now. If they wouldn't have done all of that easy credit to make people think that suddenly they had money when they didn't actually have money, it's well recorded that wages have been stagnant since the 70s. So they create this fake illusion. You're not making any more money adjusted for inflation, but hey, you got a $2,000 credit card, you can go to Colorado on vacation and drive slow. Otherwise, you're going to fall off the side of the mountain. They created this illusion, created all this debt, and it's still, to this day, it's still carrying on a legacy of draining the people. They're being parasited off of. And there's nothing left. And they act like they're going to recreate that. It's worked before. We need to get back to Reaganomics. Surely this. We shall make America great again. We just got to go back to supply side economics. We got to have more deregulation. That's the answer. We got to have more deregulation, give the corporations more power. And then they can cut loose this economy and everybody will do great. They don't even understand what happened with the economy back then. These are smart people. You know, I ain't calling smart people stupid. But how the hell you got these smart people and they don't even understand something that I can understand? And I'm not a super intelligent guy. But I can read the information. I can look at it. I was there for it, and I can look back. You know, at the time, I was one of the regular people, too, running around thinking things were good. You know, easy credit. I thought the economy was doing great, too. But I'm not so foolish that I think that now. I understand now. I learned. And yet these people apparently don't learn nothing. They still acting like they're going to go back and recreate Reagan economy or something. So much of what they go with for economics is just voodoo, isn't it? Like Keynesian economics. And they, you know, they out there talking about crap like animal spirits. You know? They make fun of people in other countries that do stuff like have witch doctors. I always laugh because, you know, they make fun of these other countries and people in these other countries like they so backwards and stupid. And they do the same thing here. They just dress it up different. You know, they sit there and talk about Latin America like them people so corrupt. Why you get stopped by the police, you got to pay off the cop. You know, if you want to do something in this backward Latin American country, you got to bribe an official. We do it here. It's the same thing. Only now they call it permits. They got a whole bunch. At least in Latin America, you ask the guy, what's this going to cost me for you to sign off so I can go ahead and do what I want to do? You just pay him the bribe and he leaves you alone. It's a very straightforward transaction. Here, you got to jump through all these hoops. And because you have to jump through all these hoops, you got to pay off everybody. You're paying off a whole army of corrupt officials. They just dress it up with fancier terminology. It's the same thing. You're paying a bribe. You know, build something on your property and you got to get all these permits and pay all these fees and get all these licenses and this and that. You're just bribing people. That's all it is. It's the same thing. They're just less honest than the Latin American country. Same thing. They look at some country and they're like, oh man, they go to the witch doctor and they still practicing voodoo. They're cutting off the head of a chicken and saying, sprinkle this blood on your stomach and your appendicitis will go away. Those people are so stupid. And yet here in the West, they'll take this economics thing seriously while some guy is muttering about gibberish about animal spirits. We've got to get the people's animal spirits. Their animal spirits have to get moving and then the economy will be better. And they're making fun of some witch doctor. It's the same shit. It's a bunch of witch doctor economists. We're going to get the animal spirits. We got to get the animal spirits will lead the people to spend more money and in the economy. They're going to somehow, the animal spirits, unless the animal spirits are bringing them a check, they ain't going to spend no more money because they ain't got to spend. We totally not a bunch of backwards third world people talking about witchcraft and voodoo. We got animal spirits running our economy. The same old. You got to trust the experts. They know about the animal spirits. It's just like, just trust the witch doctor. And yet, these people, they don't have an answer. They don't have an answer. Because to have a healthy economy, we go back to where we started. To have a healthy economy, people have to have actual more money in their pockets. To do that, you are going to have to chop the head off of the parasite. You're not going to have more blood in your body when there's leeches sucking you dry. You got to scrape the leeches off. But you see, the leeches are running the government. They bought the government. That's why all their answers are always to give more blood to the leeches. They'd be talking to the Republicans. Every so many years, the Republicans will come out and talk about, well, the answer is we got to privatize Social Security. We got to hand Social Security over to the investment bankers because Wall Street goes up and Social Security will have more money. Give more blood to the leeches. The only way people are going to have more money is if you come in, declare a debt jubilee, and you cut the head off the leeches. You cut the head off of these parasites and said, no, you're not going to parasite off. We got to do away with this and make sure people actually have money. Everything's designed for the benefit, though, of these corporations. Most dramatic example of this was during the COVID thing. Remember that? Remember how they mysteriously shut down all the competition, what little competition was left for the corporate outfits. If you were a small or medium-sized business, you had to shut your door because there's a dangerous virus going around. But it doesn't spread at Walmart. It doesn't spread at Home Depot. Those places are safe. Just wear the mask. But if you're going down to mom and pop's hardware store, you could die. So we're shutting it down. And they just eliminated what little competition was left for the big corporate outfits. Funny how that works, isn't it? If you're going to solve it, if you're going to actually figure, you have to overhaul the whole system. You're going to fix it when you're going to steal everything is designed. You see what I'm saying? The state, the government could theoretically come in and massively, just radically redesign it, but it means cutting off the parasites. Parasites own the government. It ain't going to happen. And so you're going to keep more. They're just trying to think, figure out some other way to dazzle you, you know, to fake it, to create another illusion. We got to figure out a way to create another illusion and make people think that they've got more money when they don't. Debt was the magic trick back in the 80s and 90s, but now nobody can afford any more debt. They're tapped out, so now they're trying to figure out something else. If we just figure out some, we just create another illusion instead of actually fixing the problem. We got to get into the Christian specific segment. We got to keep it rolling. The fun keeps on going. You know what to do? Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. It's written in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it. This is an important verse, I think, to remember, because it can become tempting as you walk in your struggle to think that your circumstances are above others, you know, or worse than others, or more challenging than others. And when you read this verse here, we're basically told the things you're struggling with, the things you're suffering with, the things you're dealing with, never forget, at the end of the day, they're just the things that are common to man. It's not special. You're not struggling with something that no other man has ever struggled with before. As it's written in Ecclesiastes, there's nothing new under the sun. you're not struggling with some new otherworldly obstacle to overcome. The things you're dealing with, the things you're struggling with, they're but the things that are common to man. They're things that countless other people struggle with as well. It could be easy as you get slogged down in this to start thinking that, you know, in other words, you make the things you struggle with, you make them bigger than what they are because you get so focused on them and you get so, in, you know, I don't know, so caught up in the things you struggle with. It's important, I think, sometimes to step back and remember, look, you're just struggling with stuff other people are struggling with. They're not going to tell you they're struggling with them. You know, just like you don't go around and tell everybody your struggles, but it's just common stuff. Relax. Remember, this is just the things that are common to man. Everybody, many other people currently are and have struggled with things you're struggling with, you know, both now and in the past. Just don't build them up. I guess what I'm saying is don't build those things up and give them more power than what they ought, what they actually have. And this kind of, in a way, sort of segues into what I thought we would discuss about, and that is your finite amount of spiritual energy. Now, I use the term spiritual energy, and it's just kind of a catch-all. It's kind of an all-encompassing idea. You have so much energy that you can expend in a day. Now, again, we're not talking about your physical energy where you work and physically labor and you get tired. I'm talking about your spiritual energy. And this is also going to include what some would call your mental energy. But you have so much of this that you can expend in the day. And yet, we so often, I think, we waste it. We let it get drained off in all of these different directions. This world is full of spiritual energy vampires that are looking to suck your spiritual energy off. And a lot of times you don't even realize that, you know, how much of your spiritual energy is being drained. When you start paying attention, where's your energy going? And when I jotted this down a day or two ago and thought we'd discuss it, I thought, you know, as I get into this, it's going to sound like some sort of, I don't know, new age gibberish, you know, talking about your energy, channeling your energy. You need to channel your energy and be careful where you... But we do have, and when you become aware of your energy and where it's going, you start realizing how much of it is being bled off in ridiculous areas, and you start conserving it and focusing it where it needs to be, you find all of a sudden that you have a lot more energy than what you did before. Now, obviously, things of a sinful nature can parasite off your spiritual energy. Things that are of a sinful nature, you get to channeling, and it's more of an intense channeling of your spiritual energy. We'll probably get into that here in a minute. I don't want to get into that yet. But the low drain, you know, if you've got a low drain in your electrical system on your car, you may not even realize it. You know, you go out every day, you start your car, and it runs. So you never realize that you have this low-level drain on your electric system. You go short somewhere. Something's not turning off. Something's not turning off all the way. But you go out of town for a week, and you come back, and you're shocked to find your car doesn't start. Why? Because there was a low-level drain in the background that you didn't even realize. I think sometimes we get spiritually drained like this by these low-level things, and they're in the background. And we don't even realize, and there's so many different ones, and they're constantly pulling our attention, pulling our energy, pulling our focus, and they all add up. One by themselves may not be that big of a deal, but there's so many, and there's a lot, you know, and they all, again, they all cumulatively sap us of our spiritual energy. I think one of the number one things here, and I started trying to jot down, just jotting them down as I come up with them here. We fly by the seat of our pants, as you all well know. And one of the number one things is just things that we have no control over. You know, I use the term a lot in my own thought process as I view the world and as I view things around me. I will use the phrase, it's in God's hands. That's in God's hands. Now, I'll tell myself, that's in God's hands. Now, when I say that, I don't mean in the evangelical manner of literally every aspect of things that happen in my life is God micromanaging my life. It's just a way that it's just a phrase that I use to remind myself that it's something I have no control over. You know, these are decisions other people are making with their free will. I don't have any control. I'm constantly, if I get caught up or I'm looking at something, I'll stop and I'll ask myself, is there a decision here for me to make? Is there something I need to do? I need to decide on this. And if the answer is no, then I say, that's in God's hands. And again, that's not to say that God is micromanaging this particular situation. It's just a way to acknowledge there's no decision for me to make here. There's nothing I am going to decide here that's going to change this. These are things other people have control over. These are things that are out of my control. These are decisions other people are making that they have to make for themselves. You may find this recently. We just had the holiday season and families get together. And you may have family members that cause stress. You know, they cause tension. Everybody gets together and you have that. You may have some family members that, you know, make the situation more tense. And you can stop and ask yourself, well, you don't have control over what they're doing. You know, maybe they're living their lives in a manner you don't think they should, for instance. Well, stop and remind yourself that you have no say over that. You don't control their free will. That's for them to decide. That's their decisions to make. And you make your decisions and try to walk in the path of righteousness and truth. That's in God's hands. Again, God's not micromanaging it. You're just acknowledging these are things you don't have any control over. It's easy to get sucked up by a lot of these things that you have no control over if you pay too much attention to goings on. You read the news too much. You have all of this information and all of these events that are going on, big events in the world, and you'll get stressed out over it. Over things that you have no control over. You gotta stop and remember that feeling you have when you read about these things going on and these different government corruption, wars, rumors of wars, all of these things. It's sapping your spiritual energy. You only have so much. You only get so much spiritual energy per day. And when you let these distractions, things that you have no control over, when you let them sap your energy out of you, when you need it, you don't got it. When it comes to the things that you do need to make a decision over, you do need to stop and look at and say, okay, wait, I need to deal with this. I need to look at this issue. And it may not be a spiritual issue. It may just be a financial decision you need to make, a something you need to get under control in your own household, under your own roof, something you may need to confront your wife about something she's doing. And you just keep putting it off. You just don't have the energy for it because you got all these parasites. You've got these vampires sucking your energy. And at the end of the day, you don't have the energy you need to have to deal with things you need to deal with. Because you're over here letting your energy be drained off by world events that you have absolutely no decision making in, no role of decision making in, no way to affect at all. You're letting them parasite off of you. And then when it comes down to you do need to handle things, you do need to make a choice, make a decision, you need to figure out which way is the correct path to take, you don't have any energy for it. You let yourself be sucked dry by these vampires. Other people in general can just suck you dry. They just parasite off your spiritual energy, not intentionally, just dealing with them. You know, you ever had people you deal with, people say it's your job or people, you know, where you go to work and they just, there's something about them. dealing with them, having to talk with them. There's certain people just interacting with them just makes you drained, you know? I just don't even want... Just talking to that guy, just... They just drain you of your energy, just having to... Just having to interact with them. One of the things I've run into in talking with believers and stuff is this misconception that you're supposed to have a feeling of affection for everybody. This is one of the biggest, or I say not the biggest, this is one of the most common errors I see Christian believers make in discussions with believers. And they'll say something along the lines of, one of the things I really struggle with is loving my enemies. You know, I'm supposed to love that person. I don't know how many times I've talked with somebody who's a Christian believer, and they'll get to talking about another person, and they'll say, man, I know I'm not supposed to be like this, but I can't stand that guy. You know, I know I shouldn't feel that way, and I struggle, and I'm struggling with it, but no matter what I do, no matter what I try, I just can't make myself like this guy. It's an error. God doesn't require you to feel a feeling of affection towards people. Maybe that guy really is an asshole. You know? I mean, God does not require you. Nor does God want you to deny the truth. God does not want you to lie to yourself. I really have a hard time with that guy. But, you know, I'm doing my best. You don't quote unquote love him. And this gets back to what I've talked about before, is this misconception of what biblical love even means. It's not that hard. It's I have a hard time with that love my enemies thing. And then you get to talking to him, and when you're done, you're like, well, sounds like you're doing just fine. Well, what do you mean? I'm struggling. I don't love that guy. Well, have you cheated him? Do you treat him fairly? Well, yeah, I mean, I do that. You're good. But I don't feel that they think they're coming up short because they don't have this feeling of affection for them. It's a misconception of what they mean in the Bible when they talk about love. Love your enemy, love your neighbor, love yourself. They're talking about being fair. They're talking about your actions and what you do. It always comes back to that, doesn't it? Everything in the Bible is related to action, not emotionalism. You don't have control over your emotions. I mean, you do in the sense your emotions shouldn't be controlling you. But if there's somebody you just don't like, and every time you see that person, you cringe because it's like, oh, I got to deal with this asshole again. You don't have control over that. And you shouldn't go around lying to yourself going, okay, I feel this way towards this person, but I'm going to deny that feeling and tell everybody that I actually, even though he's difficult, I have a feeling of affection for them. No, you don't. And it's not required. That's not biblical love. You are required to treat that person as you would want to be treated, to treat them fairly, not to stab them in the back, not to run around and gossip about them, not to pass along rumors you've heard because you really can't stand that guy. And it's fun to talk about him because he's an asshole. And it comes to come to find out, everybody else thinks he's an asshole too. So it's great to get together and talk about this guy because nobody likes him, and it makes you feel vindicated because nobody else likes him. Don't do that. It's fine that you don't have a feeling of affection towards that person, but at the end of the day, it's about how are you treating them. If an outside person looked at it and said, are you treating this person fairly? If the answer is yes, don't worry about it. You're good to go. But you see, all of that struggle, all of that stuff going on in your head, it's spiritually draining you. It's draining your energy off, and you're not going to have it when you need it. We have to deal with difficult people in life. It's just a fact. And there's some people that will just drain you having to deal with them. You have to look at it and remember they are who they are. You know, if this guy's an asshole, nothing you're going to do, say, or whatever is going to change that. Dealing with them is draining. Make the decisions you need to make. And don't worry about how they live their life. You know, dealing with people like that is difficult because at the end of the day, you don't think they ought to act like that. If that guy would just act differently, who are you? You don't control over his free will. If God gave him free will and he's chosen to use his free will to be an asshole, then that's his choice. What business is it of yours? Just deal with them as you've got to and then move on. But don't let it just drain you of your energy. You need that energy. You don't want to run out. If you're taking a trip, you want to have enough gas in the tank. You know, if you got to take a 150-mile trip, you're going to leave the house on no quarter of a tank of gas. You're going to fill up before you leave, right? That because you don't want to run out of gas. You want to get out in the middle of nowhere and the lights on dinging at you and you're on the side of the road looking like a fool. Done burned up your fuel pump in the tank because you let the car run out of gas. You want to have a full tank. So at the end of the day, you still got a little left over so you can get where you're going. Your work can drain you of your spiritual energy, your mind. Now, if you have a job, you know, doing manual labor, you know, I think it's a shame. I think manual labor people should have more credit in this society. You know, if your job is a part of being on a crew on a trash truck, look, don't be embarrassed of that. You're providing a critical service. Otherwise, we're all going to be buried in garbage. I'm glad every time I hear that trash truck coming once a week, I'm backing up. I'm glad. If they don't come, I'm going to be buried in trash. I'm glad they're coming. You're providing an essential service. This messed up society where we celebrate people who don't do anything. There's some asshole pushing numbers around on. I need to watch my language. I get a little loose with the colorful language. Some guy sitting around on Wall Street that we all say, oh, he's a big deal. He's important. Why, he's a fund manager or whatever made up job. If that guy disappears today and his job goes away today, it ain't going to affect me. This guy ain't pushing numbers around on the computer. Everybody run around and act like he's important because he got some made up job moving numbers around on a computer and telling people you got more numbers in your account than this other guy. You're doing good. While he siphons money numbers off in his account, and we call it money. He's important. If that guy disappears tomorrow, I don't care. Ain't going to affect my life any, but you know what? If the trash truck guy doesn't come, we're going to have a problem. I might be able to go an extra week, but after that, we're going to have a mess out here. I tell you what's going to happen. I'm going to dig a hole and that trash going in that hole and I'm lighting it on fire. We're going old school. We're going to start burning our trash. Get a barrel out there. You know what a burn barrel is. You get you a barrel out there and you put your trash in it and you light it off. Then whatever's left, you dig a hole in the ground, throw it in. That's the way we used to do it back in the day. We're going to be down to doing that again. You can be smelling your neighbors burning their trash because trash truck guy didn't come. Now, who's more important? getting back on track. If you have a job that involves physical labor, if you're on the crew for the trash truck, it's not going to be real spiritually draining because you don't really have to think about it. You've been doing this job for 15 years. You just go and you're on autopilot. It's not. It's not mentally drained. However, if you have a position where, for instance, you're in charge of the crew on the trash truck, you have to manage. You got people not showing up to work, and you got to figure out how to get enough people in enough positions to get the job done so the business moves forward. You know, those things that require that energy, they will drain you out. And at the end of the day, you don't have anything left. Talk about drain your spiritual energy. You got a nagging wife. You know, it was written in the Bible. I'm doing off the top of my head. Written in the Bible, you know, a nagging wife is just like a constant drip in the ceiling. Just drip, 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 drip every day. Talking about people to deal with, difficult to deal with. If you wound up married to a difficult to deal with woman, it'll sap your energy. And there's no escape. Hell, you go to work and deal with whatever. And then you come home, you got to deal with whatever. I deal with whatever. It's rough. You got a nagging wife at home. She's sucking your spiritual energy out. You can't escape. At the end of the day, you don't have nothing left. You ought to be careful. You young and single guy, and you know, young and single guys sometimes get desperate, you know? And what I mean by desperate is they decide, I'm ready to get married, like, you know, today. And like the first gal that comes along and they think she's marriageable material and they want to get married just because they've decided now is the time. Man, you need to be careful with that. You know, you need to take a little time with that because she's going to be living in your house. And is she difficult to deal with? There's no escape. Just drip, 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 drip. Nag, 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 nag. Inventing drama. Oh. Girls, the women now, they invent drama all the time. And it's kind of part of their nature. But in days past and traditional times, you keep all that in check. Now they got the social media and they doing TikTok videos of themselves and all the rest of it. And they just constantly gin up and create drama. As men, we want to avoid drama. We don't understand women just thrive on it. Just thrive on it. Once you figure that dynamic out, you know, that women got to have a little drama. They do. They got to create some kind of drama. It's true. Once in a while, if you're married, once in a while, just come up with something to upset your wife. Just come up with something once in a while. Give her a little drama and she'll settle down. Is she constantly nagging? Give her a little something. Oh, they thrive on it. We want to avoid it. If you wind up married to a woman that is constantly bringing drama into your house, whew, I don't care how big a tank you got, you ain't going to have no spiritual energy left. Hell, you start the day off, you wake up and she's starting. You ain't even had your first cup of coffee. And she started with the drama. She started draining your spiritual energy out of you. There's no escape. Should have been careful just because you decided one day, I'm ready to get married. Done married a vampire. She's sucking all your energy out. You ain't got no energy left for yourself. You ain't got no energy left for the Lord. Because you married a vampire and she just attached to your neck, sucking it out. Now, these are all everyday things. Like I said, it's that low drain. It's that low drainage that you don't even realize you're being sucked to the energy. Because it's kind of in the background. You've gotten numb to it. You're so numb to it, you don't even notice that it's going on. But at the end of the day, your battery's dry. These are parasitical drains on your spiritual energy. Now, sin is a whole different case. I saw a video recently of a couple women that, you know, is under one of these, you know, we don't need no man thing, and they're trying to jump their car off with said jumper cables, and they were befuddled because they hooked the cables up backwards and they melted the jumper cables, and they're like, why is it doing that? Now, you're seeing is that, you know, if these day-to-day things you deal with are parasitical drain in the background, you don't notice. Sin is just like hooking a huge syringe up and sucking all of your spiritual energy out at once. Sin misdirects your spiritual energy outward into these worldly things that don't matter. Sin sucks your spiritual energy and diverts it from where it needs to be into outwardly things. And when you get that energy sucked out into worldly things, it's being wasted, because everything in this world is temporary. It is all going to go away. Sin funnels it at a high rate. Your focus, sin removes your focus. Those things that happen in the background, those parasitic drains, you're not focusing on them. That's why you don't notice them. But when you're caught up in sin, when you're caught up in sinful behavior, you got all your focus on that, don't you? You're zeroed in on it and you can't take your eyes off of it. And it's just pulling massive amounts of energy into vain and pointless things. Vain meaning pointless. A vanity. Not looking at yourself in the mirror and being vain about yourself. It means a pointless thing. You're looking at something and all of your energy is focused into something that is just going to eat it up. And nothing good is going to come of it. Now, I wanted to talk about it today because when you become aware of it, when you become aware of it and start managing your energy, you know, you start you start paying attention. Like using the illustration I used earlier of not having enough gas in your car. When you know you got to take a trip and you're going across a desolate area and there's no gas stations, you're not going to be laying on the throttle, are you? You're going to be paying attention. You're going to be very mindful of how much gas you get the car. You easing up off. You're all excited when you're going on a downhill because you take your foot off the gas. You're like, I'm getting 99 miles to the gallon right now. And then you got to go up the other hill and put a little more energy into it. When you become aware of this and you start managing, hear me now, you start managing your spiritual energy. You start paying attention. Why am I diverting energy to this? Why am I letting these external things suck me dry, of, you know, take some of my energy? When you start being mindful of that, then you can start focusing that energy where it needs to be, on yourself, on understanding the Lord. Keep that energy to yourself. You see, if you're directing your spiritual energy inwardly, you know, to your own spirit, where it's supposed to be, you're going to be in a lot better place. It's going where it's supposed to be because you're keeping it where it's not being expended. How do I mean to say that? As I said earlier, if it's going out into worldly things, it's just being burned up and it's gone. You keep it on the spiritual self, on the spiritual side, focused inward on the spiritual, then you're keeping it because the spiritual is eternal in nature. I hope that makes sense. When you start looking, the idea here I had with talking about this is start paying attention. Start paying attention where your spiritual energy is going, and then start withdrawing it. Quit letting the vampire suck it out, because it's your choice. You can keep them from sucking it out. You have to open the valve and let them have some. When you become mindful that it's like, I'm shutting the valve off. I'm cutting them off. I'm not going to let them have my spiritual energy. They're going to do what they're going to do. I can't control what those other people are going to do. But that doesn't mean they get to suck my energy out. I'm going to pay them no mind. All right. You know, when you become mindful of that, you start conserving your spiritual energy. I'm going to tell you right now, at the end of the day, you're going to feel a whole lot better. When you did, we started off with this discussion, when it comes back to dealing with these things that are just common to man, these struggles that you do have to face, these temptations you have to face, this struggle, the suffering that's involved with spiritual growth, all of those things that we do need to be doing as we're walking in our faith, those things require energy. This world, the devil, they want to suck you dry of that energy. So when it comes time to focus on the things you need to focus on, to do the things, to overcome those temptations, those things in your life that are nothing more than what's common to man, if you don't have any energy to deal with those things, guess what? You're not going to have very much success. How could you? You don't have the energy to deal with them because you let all these parasites bleed you dry. You start becoming mindful of that. At the end of the day, when it's time to deal with the things you need to deal with, you'll have the energy to do that, and you will make progress. You won't make progress if all of these other things have sucked your energy. They've bled you dry. Anyway, I hope you got something out of that. Mind where your spiritual energy is. Start paying attention, because I'm telling you, there are parasites all over. You know, and it's just because we're in this world. Start paying attention to where your spiritual energy is going and start conserving it. And you're going to feel, I'm telling you, it's going to make a difference. You're going to feel better at the end of the day. You're going to start making some progress spiritually because you'll have the energy to do so. A lot of times when people are like, I don't feel like I'm making any spiritual progress, well, because they don't have the energy to do it, because all of these leeches are getting it. Start scraping the leeches off, and you'll have the energy to do what you need to do. We're going to wrap up on that note. I hope you got something out of today's Christian specific segment. And as always, I hope you enjoyed the show as a whole. Do put the effort in, and I really hope you get something out of it. I appreciate all of you for tuning in every week. And as always, I hopefully I'll see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.